How's it going, Yankee fans? Welcome back to Fireside Yankees with Alex and Ryan. So, pitchers and catchers report today, guys. We are underway. It's baseball season. It's been a long winter, but finally we made it. And listen, when you make it to the World Series, the winter, it feels long, but it doesn't feel as long as if you're knocked out before even getting there or really even not making the postseason at all. So we got a little extra baseball in our veins, and now we're hoping to get back to the World Series and shorten the winter as much as humanly possible. So now we look ahead to this Yankee team. Obviously, post Juan Soto, we had 1 year of him, and it feels like it never happened, you know? 1 year of a player, you quickly forget and move on. Obviously, it was a very impactful season, and the Yankees tried to, I wouldn't even say replace him. They tried to kind of pivot and piece together a more balanced lineup, more balanced team. And that's what Brian Cashman said. He thinks he has a more complete team this year. And, you know, I thought about it, and I kind of get where he's coming from. You get Devin Williams, your bullpen's much better. You get Max Fried, your starting rotation's much better. You have more defensive versatility with Bellinger. Like, they do have on paper a more complete team. The question is, do they have a better team? And I think probably not without Juan Soto. If you get a third baseman, I think you do have a better team. But we're going to have to wait and see what happens. All the analysts believe that Cashman's going to make a move. It's just a matter of where, when, and how much he's willing to spend on it. So I think it's, you know, a waiting game in that regard. But want to take a look at the projected 2025 opening day batting order for us this year. And, you know, I think that all the hints and the nuggets have suggested, Ryan, that Jason Dominguez is going to lead off, and we'll start there. You know, with Dominguez and his skill set, the power, the athleticism, the base running, he's a little bit of a different element than Gleyber Torres, who was really focusing on punching the ball into the outfield, you know, blooping singles in. Jason's aggressive, and he wants to hit the ball hard, and he wants to elevate the ball and hit home runs, but he also wants to get on base. So, you know, I think the Yankees will ask him, let's try to hone in your plate discipline, try to pick up some walks when you can. They're going to try to attack you and swing at strikes in zone. You know, swing at strikes. That's ultimately going to be the game for Jason. And we know that as he gets more comfortable, he tends to get better. So, Ryan, talk to me about Jason. Do you think he's a good option for leadoff? Is there anyone else you consider at that spot?
Yeah, I mean, look, I currently view it as a situation where it should be fluid. The Yankees should be open to anything and everything right now with who's leading off. I don't really know where the Yankees are going to go with the infield. I know that could affect their decision as well, but I'll say, man, Jason Dominguez at the leadoff spot, look, it's risky, it's ballsy, it's a lot of things. You're trusting a 22-year-old kid who is a switch hitter, who's ridiculously talented, to, in his first full season, take the mantle and become your leadoff hitter and hit in front of Aaron Judge. Now, the things I like about Jason Dominguez that could work at the leadoff spot is obviously his plate discipline. He's a patient guy. He'll work his walks. But when he gets pitches to hit, he's going to swing. And Alex, that may be a very productive place to put Jason Dominguez to start the season. A guy who is aggressive enough to swing in zone. A guy who's also smart enough to recognize pitches out of zone and not swing at them. So as long as Jason Dominguez is healthy, he goes through a normal spring training, he goes through a normal start of the season, I think he'll be an impactful piece for this offense. And the speed, the base running value, the power, those are all things that are going to play at Yankee Stadium. It's going to play at the top of the lineup. So, look, in an ideal world, the Yankees get someone who, you know, projects to be a 120 WRC plus hitter, 350 OBP, and can lead off for the Yankees tomorrow and play third base. But that really isn't out there. It's Alex Bregman, and that's really it. And the Yankees seem to be completely out on the idea of paying him long-term money. And Bregman hasn't even seemed to really settle on the whole short-term thing. So I don't know where that's headed. Obviously, where Bregman signs will affect, you know, the rest of the infield market. Could the Yankees pick someone up from a team that ends up signing Bregman? Someone like, you know, maybe a Matt Vierling or a Jace Young in the Tigers, maybe someone like a Nico Horner on the Cubs. We've talked about that a few times, but I think you and I would agree, Alex, that those are not guys that, like, you put them in front of at the top of the lineup and you go, Jason Dominguez can't steal their job. Like, those are guys who, they're a lot of their value comes through their defense and speed. They're decent enough hitters, but Jason could certainly outproduce them in any given season. I would prefer for Jason to start in the lower half of the lineup and work his way up. That's just not the personnel case right now. This, again, places a lot of immediate pressure on Jason Dominguez. And really, Alex, I mean, the season, I could argue the season banks on whether Jason Dominguez is as good as he can be. If he's that guy, if he's immediately a core part of this roster, if he walks in and in year one he has a 120 WRC plus, then yeah, I mean, it's going to be a home run. So, yeah, I think you and I can agree, Alex, that like, it makes sense. It makes sense from a profile standpoint. It makes sense to see how the Yankees kind of, would end up with someone like Jason Dominguez at the top of the lineup. But at the end of the day, it's still a risk. And, you know, if the Yankees are able to get what they need to get out of Jason Dominguez, it could be a gamble that really pays off. And we're going to sit here and talk about how awesome Jason could be at the leadoff spot. And we're going to talk about how awesome it is to have 30 steals, 350 OBP, and 20 home runs right in front of Aaron Judge.
It would certainly be a really nice element. And I think that power and switch hitting quality, and I talked about this recently, if the Yankees go into the season at third base without a true and tried starter and they go with Oswaldo Cabrera, having this kind of wraparound where you have the first batter in your lineup and the ninth batter at switch hitters is really interesting. Something that we've probably never seen before on the Yankees, to be quite honest. And it would be really, I mean, exciting to see how that kind of works out, having that versatility. But Jason Dominguez, no matter you're going up against a lefty, going up against a righty, he's going to be able to give you the best opportunity. And I think that, I mean, 112 WRC plus, right? I know Gleyber Torres had a 104 last year. That's what his projections are, 112 for Jason. I think that if he can give you 20 plus homers a year, which I think is very possible if he stays healthy, gets on base, even at a 33% clip. It's not like Torres is getting on base at like an astronomical level. I know the second half of the year was much better, but that's the Gleyber experience. It's volatile. He's up, he's down, he's sideways, he's this way, he's that way. I think that we got lucky. He got hot during the second half and stayed hot. But Dominguez, we've seen him do it at the minor league level. Now, we haven't seen him do it at the majors. We saw that small sample 2 years ago before the Tommy John surgery, where he stepped in and this first pitch he ever saw in the majors was a home run. Right? Like, this guy, and I think people forget that he's just turned 22 like a month ago. You know, I talk about it all the time, and a lot of people are like, Jason Nino's so overblown or so over-talked about, the comparisons are ridiculous. And, like, every top prospect's going to get ridiculous comparisons. Every single one. It's not just Jason. But people forget he's so young. You know what I mean? This is a 22-year-old kid about to make his debut. He was younger than Anthony Volpe when he came up. And I argue Jason Dominguez is going to have a far better offensive career than Anthony Volpe, barring any more significant injuries. And obviously, what I will say is this. I don't label Jason Dominguez injury-prone because of his age, right? He's so young that he's going to bounce back from these injuries like it never happened. If he was 29, 30, 31 and they were happening, yeah, maybe it's time to have a discussion about being injury-prone. But he's 22. His body's rebounding from these things with no problem. I think that it's just more so about getting into a good groove, watching the veterans on this team, learning from them, learning their process. And if I was Jason Dominguez, I'd be following Aaron Judge around like a puppy, trying to figure out what his process is, learn about how he stays healthy. Because, you know, obviously Judge has been pretty healthy, knock on wood, the last year or so. And this is a big guy, you know, like it's hard for these type of guys to stay healthy because of their muscles and because of their stature. And, you know, I do think that that's a good way for him to learn is just learn how these guys go about their day-to-day and their process. And, you know, obviously doing more dynamic stretching. And I know Judge obviously is probably very in tune with his body in that sense. And I think that Jason has the upside to be not just a great leadoff man, but one with power. And that is an element that we haven't had in a long time. The Yankees have been searching for a leadoff solution for quite some time, Ryan. I mean, looking at Gleyber Torres, yeah, he was great the second half, but they tested him out in the first half and he was horrible. They went to Verdugo. They had Volpe. They were going all over the place. Now, I understand some people may want to see Jazz Chisholm at the top of the order, but I think Jazz could hit 25, 30 home runs this year. And I want that in the heart of our order. You know, I think Jason could too. Don't get me wrong. But Jazz Chisholm in a spot where they have to throw him strikes, that's where I want him. You know what I mean? He is going to whiff a lot. That's what Jazz does. He doesn't have great metrics when it comes to swings and misses, but when they have to throw him strikes, there's guys on base, they have to get him out, and they're throwing him pitches that he can make contact with. He's going to hit the ball hard, and he's going to put the ball in play. And that's kind of where I want him in the heart of this lineup. Where he can maximize that skill set. So, you know, looking at Judge, obviously, at the second spot, I know some people have dabbled with the idea of Bellinger hitting second and Judge hitting third. Is that something that interests you? Or do you want, you know, you're of the proponent, like, best player has to be hitting second?
Yeah, I want Judge hitting second. And the reason I want Judge hitting second is because he's going to get more at-bats doing that. And look, I understand, you know, Aaron Judge is, you know, he loves hitting third, so on and so forth. But I'm going to be honest, man. I don't care what he wants. I care what makes the team better. We've gone down the road of giving players what they want, and I haven't seen a World Series, so it's not working. I'm of the proponent that the manager should build the lineup how they see fit. Obviously using data points and making informed decisions, not just picking names out of a hat, although I'm pretty sure that has happened before. I think Aaron Judge, you have to hit him second. He's your best hitter. You want him to get as many at-bats as possible. The last thing you want is in a big game, ninth inning, Jason Mingez gets on, and Aaron Judge isn't coming up with two outs. It's not Aaron Judge, right? I mean, I will say, maybe in a big game, maybe some people would not want Aaron Judge coming up, but I'm of the belief that good players, if you give them enough time in the playoffs, will play good. So take that for what you will. I don't believe in choking, but I do believe that maybe it's a little, like, I don't think it's a mental thing. I think he just needs to play more playoff games and it'll kind of even itself out. But seriously, though, I do want Aaron Judge hitting second. Like, I want him to get as many opportunities as possible to damage and impact the game. I even say it would be better for them to lead him off than hit him third. It would be better for them to put him first than hit him third. You also have to think of how many nobody on two out situations a three hitter's put in. That's not even like, it doesn't matter how good the top of your lineup is. A 350 OBP and a 350 OBP from the first two guys in front would be pretty good. And I think you and I would both take that from like a Bellinger and a Dominguez. And that is, still not great odds of, having anyone on, right? Like at 350 on base percentage, 35% chance to get on. Next guy, 35% chance to get on. So the odds aren't like guaranteed that either two guys will get on, and that's if they both have a 350 OBP. If they have anything less than that, those odds continue to dwindle. So, again, I just think Judge hit second. I do agree that Jazz should hit, somewhere where he can clean guys up or bring guys in. I would like him third. I also like him fifth. Either or. I think you and I agree, though, that it should be Bellinger and Jazz kind of like third or fifth, like breaking up the Judge and Stanton thing, or breaking up Stanton and Judge, and then breaking up Stanton and then Goldschmidt as well, who's probably gonna hit six for this team.
Yeah, Goldschmidt's an interesting one. Batting fifth, obviously I have Jazz in this instance. So far we're at Jason, we're at Judge, Bellinger, Stanton. I think Stanton, and I wrote about him this morning, man. I don't know what Stanton did during the playoffs, if he changed his approach, what he did. But, man, we saw a different version. We saw a vintage Stanton in the playoffs. There, he's in there somewhere. Like, that classic Stanton is in there somewhere. I just don't know how to access it over a full year. And I think that maybe, I know he was doing some stuff pregame. He was going out doing batting practice. Like, he had a new routine going. Maybe he parlays that into the regular season, which I would hope he would. But if we get a resurgent Stanton this year, and it's not as if his metrics are falling off. I mean, aside from the OBP, he's selling out for power at this point. Like, his bat speed is still 100th percentile. His hard hit rates, his power, his slug, everything is still 95-plus percentile. Like, he is still the best slugger, pure slugger, in terms of just power in the game. Obviously, the plate discipline has fallen off quite considerably. He like found it again in the playoffs. Like, it's in there. Like, that version of him is in there somewhere. And unlocking it, maybe they tweaked something, they fixed something. Maybe he was doing something behind the scenes that helped him revitalize that. So I'm pretty interested to see how he fares in 2025. But I think him at leadoff, at cleanup, makes the most sense. Then in this instance, I have Jazz at five. Obviously, you're in line with that too. And then Paul Goldschmidt at six. And Paul Goldschmidt is one of the biggest wild cards of this team right now. Let's be honest. I mean, he's a massive upgrade at first base over Rizzo. I think Rizzo had, 84 WRC plus, if I'm not mistaken, 86, something like that. So he's about 15%, let's say, better than Rizzo already on day one, because he was, Paul Goldschmidt was average last year, 100 WRC plus. And then defensively, he's about average too. So he's better than Rizzo, like, head and shoulders. If he turns back the clock, now the Cardinals, not a very fun team to play for. They're perennial league ass. And I think that, if you're Paul Goldschmidt, you're thinking to yourself, I could win. I could win a championship this year. Like, I could go from being on a team that is just never even in the mix to in the mix and, in the blender. So I kind of feel as though Paul Goldschmidt has a reason, a psychological reason, to bounce back and have a good year. If he finished the year with a 110 WRC plus and gave his league average defense, that is a substantial, by the way, $5 million less than we paid Rizzo last year. Substantial improvement. Substantial. So, Ryan, looking at Paul Goldschmidt, I like him at six. He hits oppo. He can hit some home runs to right field. What do you think we get from him? Do you think that there's a world where we get a 110 WRC plus?
That's a great question. I think that world is possible. I mean, there are a lot of projections that really like Paul Goldschmidt, and I'm not saying that to say that projections are always right, that projections are never wrong, that, you know, we should look at projections and automatically assume that that's what you're going to get. But I do think it's fair to say that when projections kind of universally believe you're going to have a pretty decent season, that it's in the cards. Like, it's not unreasonable. I think it's crazy to say that it's impossible. It's crazy to say that it's unreasonable. That's what I'll say. Look, I'm not like super high on Paul Goldschmidt. I've, you know, held that take kind of firm throughout the offseason, you know, even before he signed here, even after he signed here. But I completely get the intrigue. I completely get why the Yankees have displayed a form of interest in why the Yankees displayed interest and acquired Paul Goldschmidt. 1 year deal, easy to move off of if he's not playing well. But more importantly, he has a lot of pop and he can hit a lot of home runs. And the Yankees are trying to replace home runs right now. I know that we want to replace OBP. We want the Yankees get on base. That's still something I want this team to do. But they also need to hit the long ball. And, you know, if you want to look at what your offense can do to get your team in the game, it's hit home runs. If you have a 110 WRC plus first baseman, as you mentioned, that's a huge upgrade over last year. If he hits 23 home runs, that's a huge upgrade over last year. The Yankees haven't had a home run from a first baseman since August. Like, I think it was July, late July. I think it was July 31st. So, Alex, we're going to be entering August, September, October, November, December, January, February. We're in month 7 without a home run from a first baseman. That counts off-season months, and, you know, it's a little bit disingenuous, but I think that Paul Goldschmidt's goal is to just be here, hit 20 home runs, get me close to a 110 WRC plus, and play good defense. And he's also a pretty good base runner for a first baseman. He's a smart base runner. He's always been a smart base runner. I think that's valuable. The Yankees, I don't know how to say this, like, politely, because this is something that, like, I know is going to come off very douchebaggy. The Yankees have a lot of idiots on their team this year, it feels like. Like, there was a lot of stupid plays last year. I'm not calling these players, like, actual idiots. Like, I know they're not. Like, you know, these are baseball players. They know the game. But, God, man, they were making some stupid freaking plays. I mean, I still, like, Game 5 haunts me, man. I mean, it was stupid play after stupid play. World Series, stupid play after stupid play. It's not even, like, a talent thing. The Yankees graded out really well defensively. Base running-wise, they graded out really poorly. They were really bad on the bases. There's, like, anyone who says they're, like, not that, like, they were that bad, if not worse. Whatever, like, way you want to exaggerate it, it probably doesn't capture just how bad they were on the bases. But it feels like they're a little less stupid. And Paul Goldschmidt's one of those, smart guy, should do all the things you expect a baseball player to do, shouldn't, you know, see a ball rolling to him and stop dead in his tracks and not attack the ball or go to the bag. I'm specifically talking about a specific first baseman who may or may not have made multiple stupid errors in the postseason. But no, I mean, it's just stupid stuff. We just want to clean that up. And I think Goldschmidt helps clean that up. So I get the appeal. I don't have to agree with the appeal, but I can see why. Right. And I think that's the whole point of what we try to do is just, all right, this is why the Yankees did something. Why does it make sense? What do they see in the player? I'm not going to bat a thousand on this, right? I'm not going to bat a thousand on players I like or don't like. I love Will Warren. He could be terrible, right? And that's a swing and a miss, right? I could say I didn't really think Paul Goldschmidt was the best first baseman to get. I preferred Nathaniel Lowe, so on and so forth. And Paul Goldschmidt could hit 25 home runs and a 120 WRC plus, and I'll have egg on my face. I just want my team to win. But ultimately, like, tying back to Paul Goldschmidt here, veteran bat, hits for power, good oppo power, and not a stupid baseball player. That's fine enough for me, you know?
Yeah, I would love not stupid baseball players. That sounds very, very nice for all of us. And what I tried to kind of do in this lineup is go lefty, righty, just give it some versatility, lefty, righty, lefty, righty. So batting seventh, I have Austin Wells. And Austin Wells, like, I kind of see him as, like, this catalyst that no one's really discussing right now. Of course, we're talking about Bellinger, we're talking about Goldschmidt, we're talking about Jazz and all these elements. Austin Wells may be one of our best hitters this year. Like, he's that freaking talented. And people are like, oh, you know, this, that about Austin Wells. He was the runner-up for Rookie of the Year, right, in the American League. He lost to Luis Gil, who had a tremendous year. So the way I see Austin Wells is he was a rookie. If he gets better and we saw when he got hot. Like, we saw it. And by the way, Ryan, that whole, like, cold streak he went on during the second half of the year, I feel like people don't remember that he got hit on the hand. And his stats after that injury tanked. You know, like, I feel like that may have impacted him. You know, his bat speed, I don't know. So, interesting player to have seven. The bottom half of this lineup, you know, obviously, Oswaldo Cabrera's, like, I love Oswaldo, love him as a utility piece, not my preference to start, neither is DJ LeMahieu, neither is Oswald Peraza, Yorbet Vivas. I think that, worst case scenario, Oswaldo Cabrera is your starter, and, you know, we can live with it because his defense is really good, but obviously we want another piece there long term, so we'll see what the Yankees do in that regard, but the bottom half of your lineup, having Wells at seven is a luxury, right? Because a lot of teams would have Wells hitting, like, five, you know, maybe even some teams would have him hitting cleanup. Like, I don't think so, but I think five is probably a reasonable spot for him for most average MLB teams. What are your thoughts on Wells? I think that if he parlays what he did as a rookie into his sophomore season, we're looking at a really damn good player this year.
Yeah, look, Austin Wells, there's a couple of things I really like about Austin Wells that I think people, like, as you mentioned, just kind of overlook. Number one, he's got good game power, good raw power, good bat-to-ball skills, good plate discipline, good great defense at a premium position. He could not take any steps forward offensively and put up a four war year. That's really valuable, guys. Like, this guy already proved last year. Last year, he was one of the top five catchers in baseball, according to Fangraphs War. He was a top five catcher, in my estimation, last year. I ranked him sixth in my top 10. The only reason I bumped him down a spot is because there are guys with a little bit of a better track record who had similar years, like an Adley Rutschman was slightly worse than Austin Wells, but I banked on the track record there. But it's not like a tier gap. It's just a little bit of track record involved in there. But Alex, if he has another year like that, he should be in top five, top three conversations, and he should have the pedigree of, yeah, I've done this twice now. Twice I've been gold glove caliber, above average hitter. It's very hard to find at the position. It's very hard to find those dominant defensive catchers who can also hit a little bit. And when you look at what he did in the second half and what he did when he changed from a leg kick to more of a toe tap, he went off. He had a 122 WRC plus from that point forward. Alex, if he puts up a 110 WRC plus, let's not even, not 122, 110, goes up 6 points. It's a huge one. He might put up a five war year, Alex. He might put up a five war year. He might hit 20 home runs. He didn't hit a lot of home runs last year because he didn't play a lot. His slugging percentage is a little lower. His batting average is like 220. His BABIP was like 250, I think, or 260. Like, I expect him to hit for a little more average. I expect him to hit, like, you know, can he hit 240 this year, right? I know that batting average isn't something I really care for when it comes to, like, how good you are. But batting average certainly helps with understanding, okay, why does a guy have a high OBP or a low OBP, right? Like, Luis Arraez doesn't walk a lot, higher OBP than Austin Wells, even though Austin Wells walks more. That's because of batting average. Can Wells go from a 229 hitter to like a 240 hitter? Because if you can do that, and if you can go from a, you know, 167 isolated power to a 180, so just marginal gains, hit for a little more average, hit for a little more power, that's going to have huge, and I mean huge, I truly mean huge, I truly mean huge, like huge results on his overall offensive performance. And I'm going to be honest, man, he's a special young player. Like, I really, like, I love Austin Wells so much. Small improvements, just little improvements could have big results, and big results could lead to, I mean, he put up a 3.4 war in 115 games. You know what that paces out to? Over 150. He's not going to play 150. He's a catcher, but let's just put it into context here. Let's do the math real quick. This is Fireside Yankees and a math lesson. Kids, please listen to this podcast, unless we curse. 4.4 war over 150 games. 4.4. That's really freaking good, guys. Used freaking, not the other one, because we're here for the kids. Whoa, that sounds really bad. Austin Wells is really good. Point is, Austin Wells is very good. And if he makes marginal improvements, he could be an elite, like, top three catcher in baseball.
That he could. A top three catcher in baseball is exactly what we're looking for. We know the defensive traits are getting better. We know that the offensive attributes are solid. Like, he makes good contact, he can elevate the ball, he's a lefty, it's perfect. He's a perfect fit for the Yankee Stadium, and it's the reason why we traded Augustin Ramirez. Now we're also high on Rafael Flores, a guy who crushed in Double A last year. He got invited to spring training, excited to see how things pan out for him over the next couple weeks. But listen, now we're at the 8 and 9 hitters. Volpe, we saw something different during the playoffs as well. He also stepped it up, and it's kind of weird, Ryan, because, like, we saw several batters enter the postseason and change their stance, right? Like, kind of strange. Volpe was one of those guys. He was one of those guys that he was more standing, and then he condensed it. Like, he kind of was a little bit more leaned in, a little bit more cemented in his stance instead of kind of standing up. And he crouched down a bit and generated a lot more power that way and had a smaller strike zone because of it. So he was able to really shrink his strike zone, enhance his power, and make better contact and better decisions. So really interesting for Volpe. I wonder if that translates into his third year. Him batting .800, if he's 100 WRC plus guy, if he's a league average hitter hitting .800, we are happy. You know, we're excited about that. And I want to say, like, he could hit 15 plus homers for you. Like, I don't think that's crazy. Like, I think that's very realistic, actually. I think there's a world where he hits 20 plus if he finds his power and doesn't have to sell out for it. Like, as a rookie, he was selling out for power, and that's why his metrics were all over the place. Last year, he was going for more contact. If he finds that middle ground, we're going to see a pretty solid player. And I think that obviously he's an elite defensive shortstop. And Ryan, like, what do you think Volpe's projections look like? I think that if he puts it all together, we're looking at a guy that could hit 20 homers for you and make some good contact and you know, at least get on base and wreak some havoc on the base paths.
So the number one thing I want to point out is that, and I don't care how much flack I get for this, I'm going to say this and people are going to have their opinions. Anthony Volpe was a good player last year. Anthony Volpe put up a 3.4 WAR. I know he played 160 games, so, you know, playing a lot of games helps, but being available is super valuable. Being an elite defensive shortstop is super valuable, and being an elite base runner is super valuable. Now, as you mentioned, if he is a league average hitter, he will be, I think, an elite baseball player. This is a similar situation to Austin Wells in terms of the way his defense or his non-bat skills impact the game. He is so valuable when you don't factor in the bat, and he could be even more valuable. Like, his bat is fine enough for someone who's hitting ninth in a contender's lineup because he's such a good defender and such a good base runner. And people are going to hate hearing that, but I'm going to tell you the kinds of players who played on some of the top teams in Major League Baseball last year, or some of the top projected teams coming into the season this year. Jose Siri is going to play center field for the New York Mets. He can't hit. Like, he's had a couple of good months and a year where he was really good offensively. By really good, I mean above average. He's going to play every single day for the Mets, most likely. Or play as a strong side platoon. He cannot hit. Look at the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Los Angeles Dodgers have Hyesung Kim and Tommy Edman as their 8 and 9 hitters. Neither of them are considered elite hitters. They're considered elite defenders and elite base runners. Now, the reason why Anthony Volpe gets criticized the way he does is because, unlike the Dodgers and unlike the Mets, the Yankees don't have, like, three Hall of Famers hitting together. I guess the Mets don't also have that. The Dodgers, I'm really just going to use the Dodgers as that line there. Three Hall of Famers. Mets have two, in my opinion. I think Lindor and Soto will both go into the Hall of Fame. But even look at the Phillies, right? I mean, Bryson Stott hits in their lineup, and he's not a good hitter, right? They don't even, I would say this might be a more apt comparison. Bryce Harper is not as good as Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is so much better than Bryce Harper offensively, not in the postseason, but as a whole, that it almost makes up for similarly, supporting casts offensively. These two teams will probably be very similar offensively in 2025. The Yankees can hit with, even if Anthony Volpe isn't a great hitter. But if Anthony Volpe is, as you mentioned, a league average hitter, they're going to really hit this year because his impact, he's going to get on the bases more. That means more stolen base opportunities. That means more stolen bases. That means more base running value. That means more stupid throws from opposing catchers. That means more stupid pickoffs from opposing pitchers. Here's the thing. The Yankees are fast enough to make teams do stupid things this year. And I want the Yankees to make teams look stupid this year. That's what I want this team to do. I want them to hit home runs, and I want them to play good defense. I want them to pitch their tail off, which they will. And I want them to make teams look so stupid on the bases. I can't wait to watch Anthony Volpe get to first base, have Jason Mingus lead off. They pitch to Jason because they don't want Judge to come up with somebody on. Jason hits a single, and then they double steal. And you got to throw in the outfield. Volpe scores. Jason scores. You got all this type of chaos. Jazz is going to embarrass some teams on the bases. There are a lot of catchers in the American League who I cannot wait to see this team run on. I can't wait. I really can't. Salvador Perez back there, I want us running on him every single day. Whoever the White Sox throw out there, every single day. Logan Ohapi, running him every single day. Yanier Diaz, running him every single day. do not run on Kyle Rowley. That's the only guy we're like, don't run on him. Run on Connor Wong. I don't care. Run on everyone else. The Rays, they have Danny Jansen. He's pretty decent back there. But run on him. I don't care. Run on everyone. Because catchers can't even, it's mostly pitchers, but catchers have to have like a cannon of an arm to make up the margin of error of how slow pitchers are to the mound. The rules are built to steal bases, Alex. This team can steal a lot of bases this year. And Volpe, being league average, not great, league average, will play a huge role in the way this offense plays. Because they will be able to score runs without having, like, a double or a triple. They'll just need a single and Volpe stealing a bag or two, and they'll be set up to score.
Well, that's what we hope for. And if they add another big bat at third base, it's going to be really enhance that entire equation. But Volpe being an average to slightly above average offensive player at the bottom of your lineup is a luxury. And, you know, obviously he can do a lot on the bases. This team is going to go from one of the worst base running teams in the sport to hopefully a little bit above average. And that, like, baseball is kind of a weird thing because I know a lot of people are like, don't use the stats, don't use the numbers, like, you know, focus on what you see and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's just archaic. You know what I mean? Like, that's not where the game is these days. The game is focused on these things.
I want people who say that to, like, give me a detail. Like, I want a film review of every single game the Yankees have played. I want a film review of, like, all 22 film, but for, like, defensive players on the Yankees. Like, people who say that are also like, oh, I watched the game. It's like, well, do you know what you're looking for? Do you know what is a correct play? What does a correct play look like? All that stuff. So, yeah, we're going to lean on the data heavy. And I watch a decent amount of defensive film and base running film. And so do you. Like, we watch every single freaking game. So, watch every game. And then we compare. We use data. We make observations with our eyes. And we use data to confirm those observations. That's right. That's advanced baseball thinking, folks.
It's a mixture. It's not like we're just looking at numbers and like, oh, this guy's this, guy's that. We watch the games. You know what I mean? And when you watch Gleyber Torres at second base, the stats confirm that he is a horrible second baseman. Then you watch him in the games, you're like, yeah, he's a horrible. And the reason that we weren't totally sold on Luis Arraez is because we've watched Luis Arraez. He's arguably worse defensively than Gleyber Torres at second base. Like, there is, I mean, Nolan Arenado, awesome defensive third baseman. But the stats and what we've seen indicate that he's not a great fit for the Yankee Stadium and for the Yankees in general, because his offensive numbers are declining heavily, not to mention the financial implications of Arenado. Now, if we are able to offload Marcus Stroman, you know, the Cardinals kick in $5 million to his contract, the Rockies are paying $5 million. Yeah, you could justify it in a specific scenario. But, guys, we're paying DJ LeMahieu $15 million right now to be an elite defensive third baseman. When Nolan Arenado hits a wall because he can't hit anymore and he's declining, I want that same energy. You know, I want the same energy about DJ LeMahieu, because, like, that's where Nolan Arenado was kind of trending towards with the age and the decline in offensive efficiency and not a good fit in Yankee Stadium, which he plays half his games. So, of course, if it's the right scenario, I'd be open to it, but I'm not willing to just do it for nothing. Like, do it for a ton of money and take on 3 more years of a player that's in his decline. Like, that's not where you want to be in terms of where the Yankees should be going. So, like, there's a lot of context that goes in. We're not just looking at numbers, guys. We're watching the freaking games. You know what I mean? You watch us watch the games. We talk about the games every day because we watch them feverishly. So, you know, that being said, it's a context thing. We're not just looking at numbers. We're giving you stats because that's how we can materialize what we're seeing. But don't get it twisted. We're watching all of the film. We're watching all of the games. We're watching every single player and how they play and their kind of actions and what they say, how they move, how they field. And we're not professional scouts by any means. But it's baseball. Like, you can see players and what's wrong with them. You can see the differences in their technique and their lackadaisical or progressive approach. Like, you know, Volpe's a lot more aggressive. Gleyber Torres is a lot more conservative in how he played the defensive position. So, you know, it's obvious. You guys see it. We're just giving you numbers to support these claims. And I do think that right now the Yankees have a good balance of that. Like, they see with their eyes, this guy's a good ball player. And then they see with their numbers, the stats support that. The stats support why we're not doing this. The stats support why we're doing this. And I think that they have a nice balance going on right now. You know what I mean? Like, it's sometimes offense. Well, not sometimes, Ryan. Offense is always going to be valued more than defense. Always. However, the Yankees have built their team around their infield's defense. You know what I mean? So you can't ignore it. They have added Max Fried. They have Garrett Cole, two of the best run prevention pitchers in the game, to then go out and do the opposite, go get a bad defender and a guy like Arraez, it is contradictory to their plan, to their logic. Nolan Arenado fits that plan. But he's a subpar offensive player. Now we're okay. We're open to the idea at the right price, but we're not willing to get, we don't want to be paying Nolan Arenado $20 million, more than that, $21 million a year for three more seasons while we're still paying DJ LaFreaking Worm Killer $15 million for the next 3 years. So like, there's a lot of context, a lot of financial stuff. It's not just numbers. It's not just play. It's money. There's a lot of elements to play into this. That's why we love Brandon Donovan. Great offensive player, control, financially efficient, you know, obviously great defender as well. Like, that's why we are in love with him as a player, as a fit for us. But obviously he has to be open to being traded. He has to be on the market by the Cardinals for that to even work. So, you know, at the moment, it's an interesting scenario. It's unfolding in real time, but wanted to give you some context into why we talk the way we do, why we give stats, why we do these things, because all of the numbers that we are giving are based on us watching these games already, watching these players, watching every single moment to give you a better reasoning. So there's a lot more context that goes behind just giving you numbers. But with that being the case, a little bit of a tangent, lineup is set in the sense of Oswaldo Cabrera being your nine hitter. So just to recap everything, Jason Dominguez out leadoff, Aaron Judge batting second, Cody Bellinger at third, Stanton fourth, Jazz fifth, Paul Goldschmidt sixth, Austin Wells seven, Anthony Volpe eight, and Oswaldo Cabrera nine. Ryan doesn't know how many fingers he has. We are at nine. So I think that rounds out the projected lineup. Now, things could change slightly, but I think that's a pretty nice balanced lineup. We're going lefty, righty, lefty, righty, lefty, righty, switch, switch. A lot of good versatility and dynamic kind of performance there for you to maximize. I think that's a good lineup for the Yankees if they want to go into the season like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say in part to Nolan Arenado, if the Yankees get Nolan Arenado, man, you know, they'll win the 2018 World Series. They'll win the 2018 World Series. That's what they'll do. That's that. I don't want Arenado, bro. That's 3 years, $60-something million. I know that the Cardinals will eat some of the money. If they trade Stroman for Arenado, I guess I could live with it. I don't know. But like, God, there's got to be something else out there. And Jeff Passan is kind of, again, just kind of like, yeah, Yankees are long shots for Arenado, which, like, good. Like, whenever I hear, like, the Yankees are being cheap talk, like, I always, like, it bothers me when, like, they're like, oh, well, they can't afford to do this. And it's like, well, you can. With Arenado, I hope they pretend like they're broke. Like, I hope, like, do you want Nolan Arenado? No, we actually are bleeding money. We actually have no money. Hal Steinbrenner is actually homeless. Like, that's how broke we are. With everyone else, though, like, I want them to spend money. But with Arenado, like, yes, be the most frugal. Like, do not spend a single dime on Nolan Arenado. Anywho, if they can just get a third baseman, right, you could slide Volpe to the nine. Let's say it's a Willie Castro. Hit Willie Castro, like, eight, dude. That lineup's good, man. Like, that's a good lineup, and they'll play good defense, and they'll win a good amount of games. And, you know, I'm not trying to sit here and say that the Yankees are, like, going to dominate the American League because of Willie freaking Castro, but will they be better than if they have Oswaldo Cabrera there? Probably. And I'll say what I've said on other podcasts here, on other episodes, excuse me. The Yankees should bring someone in that is directly going to compete with DJ LeMahieu. There's no one on the non-roster invite list or in the minor leagues who is going to compete with DJ LeMahieu. No one. People are like, well, Jorbit Vivas is going to fight. There is a 0%. There are better odds that I dunk on LeBron James tomorrow than there is that Jorbit Vivas beats out DJ LeMahieu for a job. And that's not an indictment on Jorbit Vivas. DJ LeMahieu is owed $15 million and Jorbit Vivas has a minor league option. The Yankees are never, and I truly mean never, going to cut a guy at $15 million before the season starts for a prospect. For a prospect, especially one who's not considered a top, like, 10, 15 guy. I just left him off my top 30, but I'm not so self-absorbed that I'm like, my top 30 is the best one. I think there are much better lists out there that have, you know, better, more seasoned prospect writers. But, dude, and Oswald Peraza, get over it. Oswald Peraza is going to beat out DJ LeMahieu for a job. Yeah, over my dead body. And Andrew Velasquez, he's going to beat out DJ LeMahieu for a job. Dom Smith, Mets legend. No, like, none of these guys are serious candidates to replace DJ LeMahieu. Let's bring in a serious candidate to replace DJ LeMahieu. Let's bring in someone who's really going to actually have a chance to battle and fight and do a job to bring in, you know what I mean? Like, I don't see a world in which the Yankees should sit here and be like, well, LeMahieu, you got to give him a chance. No, you don't. You didn't think you had to give him a chance. I think the infield depth chart, we look at the infield depth chart and go, okay, let's say like Willie Castro and Brendan Rodgers. Rodgers replaces LeMahieu. Rodgers can hit lefties. Cabrera can hit righties. Willie Castro can play all over the diamond and was an above average hitter in each of the last two seasons. Thumbs up. Because you don't need a superstar at third base. You just need to know that you're going to get production there, that it's not going to be a black hole. As you mentioned, like let's say the Yankees get a combined 100 WRC plus and like top 8 defense at third base and like league average base running. It's not crazy good, but if that's one of their worst position groups, that's a win, guys. The Yankees have had so many just god-awful position groups in the last few years. First base last year was maybe the worst first base position group I've seen from the Yankees in a very long time, and 2023 wasn't very pretty either. Third base before Jazz got there was a disaster. Glaber was a disaster for most of the year and was pretty average. Like the player I just described, league average offense, top 8 defense, league average base running, is better than Gleyber Torres. That's better than Gleyber Torres was last year. The Yankees were, even last year, the Yankees were 17th in war at second base. Glaber was not great. The Yankees had a negative war, I think, at first. Yeah, negative 1.2, my man. Like, what? Come on. That can't happen. It just can't. Left field. Left field was also a disaster. The Yankees were 22nd in war, 0.5 war. That can't happen. You have to get better. You have to get better production there. And that's depth. That's having depth. The Yankees, I think, actually have decent outfield depth with Trent Grisham in center field as the backup. And Everson Pereira, I don't think he's like a major league player right now, but I don't know. Maybe the chance, there's at least some upside, some I don't know in him. And if there's I don't know, maybe that's upside. First base, you've got Bellinger, Rice, who can back up Goldschmidt. Cabrera can play there in a pinch. Second base, you've got everyone that can play third can play second, and everyone can play second can play third. Thumbs up. Center field, right field, like, you just feel good everywhere. Bullpen, the Yankees have like 30,000 relievers. The Yankees signed Tyler Matzek because they were bored, probably. They were like, yeah, I want to feel something. Brian Cashman's like, I haven't felt the joy. Like, I brought in Tim Hill, and I'm like, I need to feel the joy of bringing in a 34-year-old left-handed reliever again. He brought in Tyler Matzek, which I like that signing. The rotation, again, it's not like the greatest rotation on earth, but it's a good rotation, and it's got a decent amount of depth. So the Yankees just don't have any depth at third base. No one there strikes me as like, oh my God, if they're playing, oof, you've got a decent ball player. Like, Cabrera's a utility guy. Maybe Cabrera is the close thing to that. But, like, Vivas isn't a big leaguer. Peraza isn't a big leaguer. LeMahieu should be in a retirement home. Also, if you're DJ LeMahieu, man, like, dude, do you not want to, like go to Cancun, man. Go to Cabo. Like, come on, bro. Go to Cabo. Go to Cancun. I heard it's lovely this time of year, man. You want to go, go pull your hammy playing in Florida, man? Nah. Go, come on, man. Go, like, on me. Actually, I can't afford a trip to Cancun or Cabo. But, like, on the Yankees, on your, I mean, he's rich as hell, too. So, like, maybe he can just do it. Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even mean to be that disrespectful, but, like, DJ LeMahieu is just not a big leaguer. There are three non-big leaguers competing for a third base spot, and the only guy who's a big leaguer in that group is a utility guy who's been an above-average hitter for, like, 2 months in 2022. It's just not good enough. They have to get an infielder, and that just makes everything better. Volpe the 9-hitter is so much better than Volpe the 8-hitter. And Willie Castro, the 8-hitter, is so much better than Oswaldo Cabrera, the 8-hitter. That's just a fact, folks. It's just a fact.
It absolutely is. But guys, very long episode talking about the projected lineup here and lots to get through. And obviously, pitchers and catchers reporting today, so lots of storylines to unfold. And we'll keep you guys updated on the daily, as always, on the New York Yankees. And excited for the season, man. We're finally just around the bend from baseball, and it's going to be a really, really interesting year where we have to bounce back from a tough defeat in the World Series, but hell, we made it to the World Series, so we know it's possible. This team is a little bit more balanced. Hopefully they add one more piece, and we can get over the hump and be the by far best team in the American League. And I think that's right now we're probably the favorites without that last piece. So getting that last one, I think, like, Cashman knows that it makes them real contenders. It makes them contenders for the world to win the World Series, not just to get there. So I'm excited to see what the future holds in that regard. But as always, my friends, make sure to like and subscribe. Make sure to drop a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. And we'll catch you guys on the next Fireside Yankees episode. Perfect.